So let me start with this. Where are you going to be in 17 years? You know?
Good question.
What's that?
Good question, I guess.
Where?
No, that's a good question.
I'll tell you why I asked. Because the Haftorah we read this year on Parashat Miketz, we're not going to read it for another 17 years. It's one of the most rare Haftorah that we have. The famous story of Mishpat Shlomo, also known as Shlomo, and the two mothers who came before him with the child. It's a very famous story. In fact, I may be dating myself, but there was an episode of Seinfeld in which a subplot was Mishpat Shlomo, if you recall. But it raises many questions. Firstly, what's the purpose of the story? Why is that story in Tanakh? How did Shlomo know? So I'm assuming you're a basic familiar with the story. We'll see the psukim inside. But the story is two mothers come and they argue over the possession of a baby. Both gave birth within a few days. One baby died and each mother claimed the survivor. And one said the case, the other just denied it. And then Shlomo said, bring me a sword and I'll cut the baby in half and give half the baby to each mother. So how did he know who the real mother was? You're going to tell me, obviously, that the mother who wants to carve up the baby is not the real mother. But I assume that Shlomo knew who the real mother was before he asked the question. Because when you ask a question like that and get an answer from one of the mothers, Gzoru, lo liva lo la, the baby should not be mine or hers, but cut the baby in half, you can't expect such an answer because that's not normal. You would expect both mothers to say, keep the baby alive, in which case, Shlomo's back in the same position that he was before he asked the question. So why would he ask such a question unless he knew what the answer was going to be? I was a trial lawyer for many years, and the first rule of cross-examination is never ask a question to which you do not already know the answer. Because the last thing you want is a witness to say something that you don't know that's prejudicial to your client. So how did Shlomo know? Now I assume that he knew who the real mother was before he asked the question and made the demonstration, but how did he know? If he did know, so when did he know? What gave it away that Shlomo was telling the truth? And you can say handing these out already. And what's the connection to Parashat Miketz? Alright? So if you look at number one, it begins Vayikat Shlomo v'inei chalom. Shlomo awakened and behold he'd had a dream. And what does that remind you of? Vayikatz paro v'inei chalom. It's the same language, but that cannot be the basis of any symmetry between Miketz and the story of Shlomo. It has to be something a little deeper than that. So what then is the deeper connection between this story and Parshat Miketz? And now we have the sources being handed out. I thank you very much for your good work at the printer. And now we can look inside. See, here's the story in a nutshell. It's in Malachim Aleph Perek Gimel, begins Pasuk Tet Vav. Vayikat Shlomo v'inei chalom. Shlomo awakened, and behold, it was a dream. What the vision was, we'll get to in a few moments. Vayavo Yerushalayim, he came to Yerushalayim. Vayamod lifnei Aron Brit Hashem, he stood before the Ark of the Covenant. Vayal Olot, Vayas Shlomim, Vayas Mishel Chol Amadav, he brought Karbanot, he made a banquet. And Oz Tavona, Shtayim Nashim Zanot El HaMelech, right then, as soon as he came to Yerushalayim, right after the dream, these two women, harlots, came before him, vata'amodna lifanov, and they stood before him. Vatomer isha achat, and the first woman said, Bi Adoni, it pleases my master. Ani v'isha zot yoshvot b'vayit echad. I and this woman dwell in one house, meaning in one room. V'ilechi ma b'abayit, and I went with her to the house. V'ahi b'yom ha'shlishi l'liti v'teilet gam isha zot. And on the third day, when I gave birth, this woman also gave birth. Vanachnu yachdov, and we were together. Ein zari tana babayit. There's no stranger in the home. Zulati shtaim anachnu babayit, except for the two of us. Vayomad benu isha zot laila. The child, the son of this woman, died that night. Asher shachva alav, because she slept on him, she lay on him, and apparently crushed him. Vatakom betoch halayla, vatikachet bni meitzli. She arose in the middle of the night and took the son, the child, meitzli, that was next to me. Vamatcha yishena, and your servant was sleeping, meaning me. Vatashkiveu b'chayka. And then she put that child that she took, the living child, she put him in bed underneath her bosom. And the dead child she put under my bosom. I woke up in the morning to nurse my son, and behold, he's dead. And I was able to deduce right then, that morning, this is not the son to whom I gave birth. That was the story. That was the narrative that she said before Shlomo HaMelech. So the other woman said, no, meaning it's not true. My son is the living son, and hers is the dead son. V'zot omeret lo, chibnei chameit uvnei achai. Your son is the dead one, and mine is the living one. V'atidaber nelefnei hamelech. And they started arguing with each other in front of the king. So a few things are very strange about this. I mean, the whole story is strange. First of all, if you notice, only one woman really testified. The one who told this sorrowful tale of the baby dying under the weight of the mother, and that mother performing an exchange, a switch of both babies. The other mother has no story to tell. She just says, lo, no, it's not true. My son is alive, your son is dead. And the other woman says the opposite. No, your son is dead, mine is alive. And that's what they did. Vayomer HaMelech. So then the king says, Zot omeret, what you mean to say is Zeb bni achai uvnei chameit. You're saying my son is alive and your son is dead. V'zot omeret lo, chi bnei chameit uvnei achai. And you're saying that your son is dead and mine is alive. If you turn the page for a moment to the Radak, you see an interesting halacha that is largely followed today in Batei Din. Number 6, Om Rabotenu Zalti Rishalmi, Mikan Shetzarach HaDayan L'shnot Tanot Balei Din, Kidei Shishma Balei Hariv Shevin Tanoteim Alei Mishpatim. When you hear a case, the Dayan, at the end of both cases, repeats, basically, the essential claim of each side. All right? I've sat on Batei Din, and right away they start arguing, the other guy starts arguing, and the point is, no, it's not an argument. It just, we're trying to clarify, this is your taina, this is your claim, and the other side, this is your claim, so everything is clear. So that halacha comes from Shlomo. All he basically is repeat back to them what they said. Zot omeret, zeb bnei achai uvnei chameit, v'zot omeret lo, ki bnei chameit uvnei achai. That was the discussion. That was the testimony. Vayomer HaMelech. The king said, "Kechuli cherev, bring me a sword." Vayovi acherev lefnei hamelech, and so they brought a sword before the king. Vayomer hamelech, and the king said, "Gizru et hayelet hachai lishnayim, cut the living child into two, utenu et hachatzi lachat ve hachatzi lachat, and you'll give half the child to one mother and the other half to another mother." So the real mother, whose son was alive, said to the king, because she was filled with compassion for her child, she said, give the living child to the other one, v'hameit al temituhu, but do not kill him. Sounds reasonable. Except, v'salta merit, the other mother said, gamli gamloch lo iye. No, no, the child should not belong either to me or to you. Gzoru, cut the child in half. So like I prefaced, it's such a strange response, you have to admit. Because the whole point of her coming to Shlomo was to try to gain possession of the child. So now, with the case about to be determined, why should she say, Gamli, Gamlo? Not me, not... No, the whole point was she wanted the baby. Why would she say no? Doesn't make any sense. So the question is, who is the real mother and who is the fake mother? And how did Shlomo know? Well, it's at that point, Vayana Melech Vayomer, Tenula Tayaluda Chai, Vahameit Lotamituhu. He Imo. Give the living child to that mother, but don't put him to death. He Imo, she is the mother. And we'll see, in fact, that the Gemara says, yeah, it's number 7. Omer Rabbi Elazar, it's on the flip side. The Gemara Makot Avchav Gimel Amid Bet. Three times Ruach HaKodesh appeared in a judicial capacity. One was Beit Dino Shel Shlomo. One is in this week's Seder, Vayeshev, in the Beit Din of Shame. But Beit Dino Shel Shlomo, Dichtiv, Vayan HaMelech, Vayomer, Tnu Ata Yulud Achai, V'meit Lo Temitu, He Imo, Meno Yada, how did he know? Dilmi Arum Ma'arma. Maybe she is trying to deceive him. Because Yotza Batko Va'omra He Imo. Meaning a Batko came out and said, no, she's the mother. So everyone knew. Before then, it was just Shlomo's deduction that real mother was the real mother. But now the question is, how did he know? Who's the real mother? Who's the fake mother? And I guess the essential point here is that there was only one witness, really. Let's call her the narrator. Is the narrator the real mother, or is the narrator the fake mother? Now, note the connotations here. If the narrator is the real mother, then she's telling a very heartfelt tale of woe, that here in the middle of the night, this woman kidnapped, basically, her baby, exchanged her living baby for the woman's own dead baby, stole the baby, and she's alive. That's one possibility, that the narrator is the real mother. What's a second possibility? That the narrator is the fake mother. Sounds strange. But the whole story, as it unfolded, as it was told to Shlomo HaMelech, came basically from a woman who concocted this whole Hitchcockian story, but in order to pretend to be the real mother and to deprive the real mother of the baby. Meaning, here she made up a whole story just to fool Shlomo HaMelech into giving her the baby. So that's the question. Which is it? Is the story true, or is the story totally fabricated? So we'll get back to that. And you should know, the Mefarshim are not entirely clear. I have my own opinion on it, just the way the Psukim flow. But we'll see, it's not entirely clear, because you would think on one level, the one who's telling the story should be the one who's telling the story. Yes, sir?
I would think that it's the first one that
okay.
She said it herself, that the real mother, because the other one in the end who saw it didn't even want the baby. So why would you make up a story to get a baby if you don't even want the baby, you're just jealous that the other woman has a living baby?
So you're saying the narrator then is the real mother, the fake mother?
The real mother.
The real mother. But, I mean, the real mother, so she told the story,
yeah,
the truth of the stolen baby. Okay,
so
it's a very logical approach because the story comes from her mouth. It's logical, which is not necessarily to say it's correct. Yes, sir?
It's not entirely clear, to me at least, in verse 27, that King Solomon, to whom King Solomon is saying, give her the living boy. It's not clear if he's referring to the narrator or the...
It's not clear, that's correct.
The
psukim, that's why I asked the question.
Okay.
The psukim are vague. You don't see in the psukim that they say the one who told the story is the real mother. Obviously, he knew who it was.
Well, my point is that in response to what was just said, it's not even clear in the end.
Correct.
Maybe it is either.
The Navi leaves it vague, but we, as detectives, will have to try to unravel the story to see who we think was the real mother and who was the fake mother. Well, let me just read the last pasuk, then I'll get to you. Vayishmu kol Yisrael at the mishpat asher shafat ha-melech. All of Israel heard this the justice that the king rendered. Vayirum mipnei ha-melech, and they were in awe. They feared the king. Ki ra'u ki chachmat Elokim b'kirbo la'asot mishpat, because they saw that God's wisdom is upon him to do this type of justice, so to speak. Shlomo HaMelech's coming out party. By the way, how old was he when this was taking place? Do you know? Guess? He was 12. He was not yet bar mitzvah. Now, we have to understand, like, what's the great chachma? Is there anyone here? You had two mothers in front of you. One says, keep the baby alive. And the other says, no, cut the baby in half. Why would you think that that's the real mother? You know, there's an old Jewish joke about two women waiting for prospective sons-in-law to come by train in Europe, and only one showed up, and each mother, my future mother-in-law, claimed this man for their own daughter. And they went to the Rav, and like the story here, one mother said, give him to the other one, and the other mother-in-law said, no, cut him in half. And the Rav Paskin, the one who wants to cut him in half, that's the real mother-in-law. So he awarded the man to her. Yes, sir.
I don't really think it matters. I don't think that actually matters whether or not it was the name. Even more pertinently.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
What?
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
I mean, the point, having one canary and the other one say, no, it's wrong, I don't think that's necessarily a function of how they necessarily showed up in court. Rather, I think this might not necessarily be precise dialogue, but rather just showing that both of them made the same claim, except opposite in mirror to each other, not necessarily that one was more assertive in the court proceeding. But two,
what you're saying is very plausible.
But two, and more importantly,
but it's absolute, he said, but very plausible.
You don't think there's any
evidentiary weight should be given to who related the narrative. That's what you said.
Not necessarily. And I think far more poignantly, every time I've read this, I don't think it's actually necessary to say that the woman to whom the child was given is the mother who actually bore the child. Meaning, what I think is the true...
Well, you think he made a mistake.
I think the true inyan, the true chokmah of this, is not that Shlomo HaMelech was able to determine who actually bore the child. It's who was most careful and most proper to be a mother to the child. In truth, it is entirely plausible that the one who did not bear the child was in fact more caring towards it, and was therefore the true mother, not in the sense that she actually bore the child. But
that's that. What's that? So that's a good argument, except for one thing. And that's the Gora Maka, which said that once Shlomo ruled, he imo, meaning she is the mother. So it's not just that she's going to be the adoptive mother, she was the mother. So Shlomo was able to figure out who was the mother, and the question is how. So you change your mind.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to change your mind? Okay. It's not simple, but we have to understand the nuances. Like what Shlomo heard, granted, he was a great genius, and like I said, if it just one mother says kill and the other one says no, keep him alive, what's the great chachma in that? But that he was able to use that question to elicit the answer that he knew was going to come, so then we have to understand how he did that. That was Shlomo's great wisdom, and that's why the people saw kiro ki chachmat Elokim b'kirbo la'asot mishpat. Before we get to that, I want to ask another few questions. First of all, it starts in Yud Zayin that Isha Zod Yoshrop Evayit Echad Ve'Leidi Mababai. We're in the same house, same room, and she gave birth, or as I gave birth. And on the third day, it says she gave birth, I gave birth, Vanachnu Yachdav, or she gave birth, Ein Zori Tana Babai. There's no stranger in the house. Why did she say? So I bolded it. Why did she say Ein Zori Tana Babai only for the second birth, for the birth of the other woman, and not Ein Zori Tana Babayit in the first case? could have said in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ani v'isha zot yosho b'vayit echad, ein zor itono b'vayit, v'yileri ma b'vayit. No, she waits until she relates the second birth, the birth of the other woman, to state that there's no stranger in the house. Secondly, who's in possession of the baby? All right? So that we don't know. And I would imagine they tussled over the baby, and they came before Shlomo holding the baby together. But why don't we say, if, let's say, one was holding the baby, why wouldn't we say, Hamotzi mechaver olav araya? It's a classic halachic principle. The burden of proof is on the one who wants to remove something. So here, she's claiming the baby was stolen from her. Who is then, according to this, it's implicit, who's holding the baby? The other woman. Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. She would have to bring proof that the baby is hers. What's the proof? There's no evidence. There are no witnesses. Ein zoritona babayit. So why don't we just say, why didn't Shlomo just say, they can't rule, there's no basis to rule, because there are no witnesses, there's no evidence at all. Which begs the question, why did these two zonot go to Shlomo HaMelech altogether? We have a very sophisticated system of batei din. You go to the Beit Din in your city. You go to the Beit Din of Chav Gimel. Who goes to the Melech to adjudicate these types of cases? Next, the argument seems identical. She said, she said. What does it come down to? She says, no, the dead baby is yours and mine is the living. And there's no, mine and yours is the dead. They're basically saying the same thing. So on what basis is Shlomo going to determine, without any witnesses or evidence, who is correct? And finally, how does this prove Shlomo's wisdom? What's the great chachma here? So let's start. We'll go through it again slowly. We'll go through it again, not entirely, but we'll just hit the high points. Who were these women? The Medrash says in number 2 in Kohelet Rabbah, Oz Tavona Shtaim Nashim Zonot. Then these two harlots came. Mihayu, who were they? Rabbi Meir Omer Ruchotayu. They were demons or spirits, meaning they were not real people. They were people who were said, as if to say the story was contrived in order to show Shlomo's wisdom to everyone. Rabbanon Amre Yevamot Hayu. The Rabbanon say they were Yevamot. Meaning what? Meaning that each of them had their husbands die. So one of them now needs chalitza, and one of them does not need chalitza. Because if a woman dies, a husband dies, the wife has no children, the wife needs chalitza from the husband's brothers. But if there's a child, you don't need chalitza. So now it makes a little more sense on some level why even the second woman would say the gzoru, cut him in half. Because if no child is alive, then neither of them need chalitza, and they can move forward. So now it's not so preposterous, it's a little more comprehensible. There's another measure that said they were tsarot, a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, and so they were just generally always at odds. And finally, the measure says, Reb Simon, zonot mamash hayu, they were prostitutes, occupational hazard, votzi dinon below edim hatra. And they just came forward to the king without any witnesses, no warning, nothing. They just showed up, and that's the suddenness of their appearance that the Navi mentions. Oz tavona shtaim nashim zonot el hamelech. Well, why was it necessary to demonstrate Shlomo's chachma? So just a few psukim before, in the same parak, not part of the Haftarah, right before that, Shlomo Melech has his famous vision and tefillah in Givon, soon after he assumes the monarchy. And he asks for one thing of Hashem. V'natata l'avdecha lev shomea l'shpot et amcha l'avin bein tov l'oratz, number 3. Ki mi yuchal lishpot et amcha kaved hazeh? Who can judge such a weighty people? Vayomer Elokim Elov, Yana Shashalta Devar Zevelo Shaltal Chayamim Rabim. You didn't ask for Osher, you didn't ask for longevity, you didn't ask for wealth, you didn't ask for defeat your enemies. You just want to shout lecha havin l'shua mishpat. You want understanding heart to do justice. Hine asiti kedvarecha, hine natati lecha lev chacham v'navon asher kamocha lo hayalefanecha v'acharecha lo yakum kamocha. God says, that's what I'm going to grant you. I'm going to grant you chachma. And now we see, that's pasuk yud bet. Tetvav begins the Haftarah. He awakens from this dream, goes to his temporary palace, makes a mishteh. At the mishteh, all of a sudden, Oz Tavona Shtayim Nashim. Okay. The Barbanel writes, Oz Miyad Lefishe Hikra Hashem Lefonav Nisiyon Azeh Laharot HaChachmato. God maneuvered events, so this story should come in front of the entire royal court, so people should see the wisdom of the king. Now, understand also, obviously, that these women had no busha at all. They had no shame. These prostitutes come before the king. They're basically boasting that there are no fathers in the picture that they know of. They ran to the melech, not to Beitin. Why? Because fake mother thought it would be easier to fool the king when you just surprise him on the spot. Meaning, if they had gone to a beitin of three, what's a beitin going to do? Derisha v'chakira. They start investigating. Yeah. See, where is the evidence? Mm-hmm. Are there witnesses? The many questions the beitin could ask. But when you spring the story on the king, then it means you have another agenda. So I'll give it away. Personally, I think the narrator was fake mother, not the real mother. We'll see in the psukim how it plays out, though. That's what the Abarbanel says. Now, let's just go again through the story, and we'll see a few things. So the third day, Pasuk Yudchet, third day Lulitti, Vatei Lad Gam Isha Zot, V'Nachi Yechdav Ein Zari Tana B'Bayit. On the third day, she says, this woman gave birth, and there's no other person in the home with us. There's no one else there. Why should that matter? So now we come to Rabbi Yaakov Fidanke, who has a commentary on the Abarbanel's Perush on Nevi'im. Rabbi Yaakov Fidanke was a Sephardic dayan in the Beitin in Hamburg. He died in 1701. So he says, we don't say Hamotzi Mechaverov Olav Haraya here. Why? Because there's only one chazaka. What's the chazaka? There's a chazaka that one baby was alive. So now the narrator comes and tells this tale, and what is she saying basically? I could have said that she gave birth to a dead baby. I didn't say that. I'm telling you the baby was alive, but she killed the baby. That makes a story sound more plausible. But it comes out, since there's muchzik only, that there's one baby, the first one that was born, therefore, it's basically a case, to borrow a phrase, hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir. The mouth that prohibited something is the same mouth that prohibited it. So she's trying to bolster her credibility by saying that I'm the one who's telling, I didn't have to tell you the baby was alive and died, I could have said the baby was never alive. In which case, there's only chazaka one baby's alive, and there's no case. But here I'm telling you the baby was alive, but she killed the baby. That's why there's one chazaka, there's no motzvichar olav harayi. It brings a case of a story from Brachot. Now, so that means ein zari tana b'bayit. Why it's the second one? Because when the first baby was born, she didn't say that. Mistama then, there were other people there. So there were other people who saw the first baby born, or one mother with a baby. But when the second baby is born, ein zari tana b'bayit, there's no one else, it's just the two of us, So that means there's no chazak at all that he even was a live second baby. So just as you can rely on me to testify that the baby was alive, so too you can rely on me to testify that that baby died because the mother accidentally killed the baby. Vayomad ben Isha zot laila sheshach vayilav. That night, the mother went to sleep and killed her baby because she lay on him. Vatokom betoch halayla. Vatikach ebni meetzli. She took the baby that was next to me. Vamadcha yishena. And your servant, your maidservant was asleep. Vatashkiveu b'chayka. She took the living baby again, in her bosom. Vepanah meid eshkiva b'chayki. And she put the dead baby in my bosom. And here I think she messed up. This is the first thing that Shlomo picked up on. But first, let's read the Malbim in number 4. Vatikach ebni meetzli, gamze lo l'raya, ki ein b'na hamet, ki achar shemitat hayel and hayelde sheshachva lo vimo, ki cheni kira bo, sheze sibat mitato. This is also proof that the dead baby was not hers, because the baby died from the weight of the mother. And that's that she recognized that as the cause of death. Uvena lo hayamunach b'chayka rak etzla. But her baby was not b'chayka, it was etzla, etzli, meaning next to me. She made a point of saying, next to me, v'rak hi yishkivato b'chayka k'dei shetitesha himitoto. But she put the baby in my chayk to make it seem as if I killed the baby. What's the mistake that she made? We need sleuths. What's the mistake? What she should have said, yes. Correct. Exactly. Exactly. Very good. Vatikach ebni meetzli. She took the baby from next to me. I was asleep. Vatashkiveu b'cheka. She placed the baby, rest of the baby, again in her bosom under her. She should have said vatashkiveu etzla. That's what she should have said. Because if the cause of death was vatashkiveu b'cheka, why would she then take the living baby and put the baby in a position where that baby's going to die? All right? That's the first thing that Shlomo HaMelech picked up on. She didn't say, next to me. She said her baby, when she gave birth, she placed next to her. But when the second baby was switched, presumably, she didn't say the baby was put next to her, but the baby was put underneath her. That has to be false. Because then she would have killed the second baby as well. Vakum baboker leiniket bini v'nei meid v'ponei ne'lo babok v'nei lo haya v'nei asher yolati. Okay, that is the narrator. That ends the story. Vatomer isha acheret lo. She just says no. Bini achai uvnei chameid. My son is the one that's alive. Yours is dead. And she said no. Lo. B'nei chameit uvni achai. Yours is the child that's dead, and mine is the one that is alive. We'll skip the second point of the Malbim, but go to the Malbim in Chavbet, and now you see a nuance, a very powerful raya. Did the women, I said, it was she said, did they say the same thing? No, they didn't say the same thing. One said, B'ni achai uvnei chameit. What's the emphasis on? What comes first? B'ni achai. The other woman, what comes first? B'nei chameis. In other words, for the other woman, by the way, just if you just follow the psukim, the narrator, call her woman one, ends. Vatomer isha acheret, that's woman two. She's the one who says, B'nei achai uvnei chameit. And then the narrator responds, lo, ki b'nei chameit uvnei achai. What then was the whole intention of a fake mom? Not so much to have a baby, but rather deprive her of the baby. Meaning if I can't have mine, because mine is dead, I don't want her to have one either. And here the Malbim says, Pasuk Chavbet, number 4, Siper HaKatuv Ki B'dabram Amra HaNidbat B'lshom B'ni Achai V'nei Chameit V'atovat, the plaintiff said, B'hepech, B'nei Chameit V'nei Achai uklal bilashon shadam yakdim tamid mashehu haikar v'yacher tatafel. The way people argue is they'll say what's most important to them first, and they'll use secondary arguments later. Ulefi zeh hasavar notenet sheshosh edikdeka lagdim bilshon abni achai kodem ikar migamata sheyachai b'no. Therefore, it makes sense to say that the woman who first said "Bnei Achai," she's the real mother. She's telling the truth. Whereas the one who said "V'hamikadem b'lshona Bnei Chameit," your son is dead. What is she trying to prove most? Not that her son is living, but that the other one's son is dead. Ikar megamata sheyia hameit ben chaverta lo sheyia achai b'no. From that alone, Shlomo could deduce who's the mother. The Chida said the same thing in number 5, a little before, a century before the Malbim. It's her own mouth that did her in. What sense does it make that she just wants to deprive the other woman, real mom, of her child? So the Bali Musar say here it makes a lot of sense, because the root of kinah, jealousy, is not that why can't I have X. The root of jealousy is why does the other guy have X. That's what bothers people. So that's really jealousy that becomes uncontrollable, and in fact very often leads to the most repugnant actions. The truth is, you can't prove a negative, so all real mother could do is say, lo, none of this is true, the whole story is fabricated. But the response of fake mother is very revealing. B'nei chameit, that's the ikar, and therefore what mattered more to her was B'nai Chameit, more than B'nai Hachai. The Abarbanel makes another point, and he says that when Shlomo heard the accusation from fake mother, the narrator, that she said, I underscored that she didn't say Vatashkiveu etzla, but Vatashkiveu b'cheka, which was the cause of death of the dead child, then he realized that this mother has a violent streak. And that already, then he knew that she had a violent streak and she was pathologically jealous of the other woman, that the macabre question he would ask, the test, cut the child in half, how the woman would respond. So again, that's the clue. When he heard her say, Vatashkive asher shachva olav, that's the cause of death, which is of course horrific. And then Vatashkive b'cheka, as he's trying to do it again, then he knew that this woman, how she's going to respond to the question or the statement of Gizru atayel rachai lishnayim. That was the test. Because if the key was for fake mother just to deprive the real mother of the baby, then this was a way to deprive the real mother. And that's why, the question is so preposterous. Cut the baby in half. So she blurted out what was on their mind, meaning it was an instinctive, almost emotional reaction. The real mother said, no, Tenulat ayulut achai, v'ameit al temitu, the last thing I want is that you should put the child to death. And the other one said, no, gam li gam loch, because what was her point? Her point was just that she should not have any baby, just like fake mother had also. Now, there's something else that should be added, and that is, like, why would fake mother even think to respond in such a way? Like, what's the plausible argument? So let's assume she's violent and she's jealous and all that, but it would be so obvious to the onlookers, to the spectators, that the woman who's saying to kill the baby is not the real mother. What was her thought? Because Shlomo, here's this young king, and Shlomo says, Gizru et hayel et hachai l'shnayim, utenu et hachatzi l'achat, betachatzi lechot. Shlomo sounding like very straightforward, very businesslike. This is the way to divide it. You know, split. Everything is even. As an aside, one of the things that dealt with the rabbin, unfortunately, was divorces, and very often it came down to visitation rights. And many judges, if they went to civil court, which is a mistake, but many judges in civil court would know nothing other than dividing everything equally. So I remember one specific case that the father moved to Englewood and the mother was in Teaneck, and the judge said, all right, everything is equal, down the middle, children. One day Rosh Hashanah with the father, one with the mother. One say to the father, one say to the mother. They said, it's not feasible because they don't drive. And the judge said, well, that's your problem. That's gizru. Cut it in half, equal. Doesn't always work like that in a healthy manner. So why did the mother say what she said, fake mother? Because once Shlomo said that, what's the best way now to curry favor with the king? To agree with him. In other words, if it sounds plausible to the king, because why else would he suggest such a thing, then she thought it would show deference to the king and her appreciation of his wisdom, and thereby gain some advantage in the ultimate adjudication by demonstrating openly her agreement with the king's mahalach. Gamli gamloch lo yiyeh gzoru, cut him in half. By the way, this argument's been used in other contexts as well. Is it always so obvious that the one who says cut the child is the fake mother or the fake owner? All right, I've heard this argument for years made by nefarious people. When you come to the land of Israel, who's been supporting partition for the better part of 85 years? The Jews. Who's all or nothing? The Arabs. So we're basically saying, cut the baby in half, we'll share. All right? You'll say it's not a baby. So Rashi says in last week's Sedra, in number 8, God, so to speak, folded all the land of Israel under Yaakov Avinu, to show him it'll be relatively easy to conquer it for his children. Maybe it's not so easy because we have, or a good many Israelis, have long placed to the side this notion of Eretz Yisrael HaShlema, of Kol Eretz Yisrael. But Eretz Yisrael, as the land God gave us, is also an indivisible whole. And yet we are, even today, I mean, split it, cut it, give, and that'll bring some peace and security. So it's not entirely so. Nevertheless, what is the point over here? Like, why did the Navi bring this story about Shlomo HaMelech? And what's the connection to Parshat Miketz? So I think the answer is that the key to leadership is Chochmah, is wisdom, and then applying it, which of course needs siyata deshmaya, but you can't rely on that because we're dealing with people in front of us. You can't wait for divine inspiration. And that's really the connection to Parshat Miketz. It's not just that Vayikatz Paro, Vayikatz Shlomo v'nei chalom. It's not the connection to Paro, but the connection to who? To Yosef. Meaning, it's not just that dreams are mentioned, but it teaches us how a melech, a leader with chachmah, is able to transform the world and to save lives and to decide based on reason, and then all see, everyone who's in the vicinity sees the great benefits of chachmah and the wisdom of the particular decision. Not just chachmah in abstract, but chachmah is applied in a particular case. So Malm says in number 9, they saw the quality. They heard the quality of his judgment. And they realized right away how he was able just to listen to the few words that they said, and they would know with whom is the true justice. Then they feared the king, because they saw that God's wisdom is within him, l'dat asher b'lev ha'balei din, to know what's in the hearts and minds of the litigants. And the Radak adds, because of this, the effect on the populace is even more far-reaching. L'fichach yarumi panav lasota vara v'afilu b'seiter kiro ki barov chach matay yatzilar mishpat kimoshe nase b'zeh mishpat. Because they see that the king is able to really read minds and know who's right and who's wrong. And nobody wants to be in the presence of a human X-ray machine that's knowing what's going on. So God is the one who's Yodea Nistarot. But now you have a king who just listens to the way you're relating a story. And he's able to deduce from every word who's right, who's wrong, who's real, who's fake, who's telling the truth, who's lying. So that's Yira. That's Yirat HaMelech. And Mora HaMalchut is essential to having good governance and a good citizenry. And finally, the Medrash in Tehillim says, if I was there, I would have placed cotton around the baby's neck so Shlomo could not kill him. Lo dayo echot shemeit el tzivala sheinil sheigzor. He said the reaction of the people when they heard Shlomo's initial macabre test of cutting the baby, kevan shero sankliten shelo hitchilu omrim, they saw the sword bearers come. They quoted the pasuk Kohelet, Iloch eret shemakech nar. Woe is the land whose king is a nar. Not just a young person, but a fool. Someone who lives without wisdom. Then v'lo asah. But he didn't do anything. Kevin shamar tenu lot ayulot achai. V'mei lot mitu. Yatzta batkol v'amra. Hi imo. A batkol rang out a heavenly echo and said, she is the right mother. Not the narrator. Real mom. Kevan shero kach amru. The next pasuk. Ashrech eretz shemakech ben charin. Heve mishpatecha lamelech. Heve mishpatecha lamelech tein. Vitzit katcha leben melech. Then they saw ben charin, a free person. A free person whose mind is not guided or overwhelmed or controlled by passions, but his mind is controlled by his wisdom. Then they saw the brilliance of the king that they had, this youth of 12 years old. Yes, sir. And by the way, the same thing happened with Yosef HaTzadik. Was Parah's reaction, not only to Yosef's interpretation of the dream, but Yosef's ability to say to Parah, here's the dream, and here's what you have to do to rectify the problem going forward. Ein chacham v'novon kamocha. There's no one in the land who has your wisdom, who has your sagacity, and you see such a thing can only come from Hashem. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it seems like at this sort of at this young age, he's at the height of his sort of connection with Hashem. Like this is closest to when we hear, when we are told that, you know, he gets his blessing.
Well, he didn't. Yeah, it was a prophetic vision, but right. Then again, he had other good moments too. He right. Didn't live a long life, Shlomo. You know,
right. And
he only reigned for 40 years. He died at age 52.
Right. So like at this sort of young age, and further, we don't see him in the greatest light.
Well, it's only because he was not able to sustain his monarchy through his son. But while he was the king, aside from the wives,
I think
1,000 wives, that's probably 950 more than anyone should have. But aside from that, but everything was done also with chacht, cement alliances. By the way, he married Bat Paro at the beginning of Perek Gimel, before this whole story. So that was not considered something that was against the Torah or even somehow offensive to what's supposed to be Shlomo's exalted nature. But you see, a few psukim later, his wisdom travels throughout the world, and Malkat Shva, the Queen of Sheba, comes to see him, and people ask Shlomo questions about nature, about science, about psychology. I mean, it's the Book of Kohelet. Shlomo became the repository of wisdom. That's what we say of him, like the Ramban says in the introduction to the Torah, he's Chacham Mikol Adam. There's no one greater than him in wisdom. Yeah, so the apex of Jewish monarchy, Jewish nationalism, were the reigns of Shlomo and of David and Shlomo. That was it. And in fact, we say at the end of Chazon Yeshayahu, the phrase that we say in davening every day, V'ashiva shoftach v'rishono, V'yoatzayich v'atachila, right? Who are the Yoatzayich? David and Shlomo. And that's what we want. Shoftayich is Moshe and Aaron, but Yoatzayich, those are David and Shlomo. Because that's what we want. That's Chare Shemena Kekadem. Okay, thank you all very much.